Today's guest started off his entrepreneurial journey at 9 years old and found out real quick that he needed to figure out some out-of-the-box ways to gain business. These days, he knows that the businesses that thrive are the ones that think creatively and not rigidly. Nir Bashan, founder and CEO of The Creator Mindset, looked at the normal perspective of starting a business and noticed that so much of the content focused on the why, but the how, not so much. Talking with Nir, we covered the importance of active listening and constantly soliciting feedback so that we know what problems we're actually trying to solve. And that's just one of the 90 plus tips he offers in his book. Find out more about Nir by reading his book, The Creator Mindset, and his site at nirbashan.com. And as always, enjoy the listen. Hey, you're on the Hot Mic at Arch DevOps with Fritz. I'm here today with Nir Bashan, founder and CEO of the Creator Mindset LLC. How you doing today, sir?
Good. Very excited to be here with you.
Awesome. I'm excited to have you on. So, well, Nir is from Orlando, Florida, which I imagine it's a lot warmer there than it is right now here in St. Louis. It's a little bit chilly, but hey, it looks like he's having fun. So Nir, tell us a little bit about what you got going on. What is the Creator Mindset all about?
So yeah, thanks for having me again. This is really a theory that I've had since I was a little kid. I was 9 years old going door to door washing cars in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that I had to be creative in order to do well. Most people didn't let me wash their cars because I was 9 years old and they were very protective of their 1981 Pontiac 6000. You know, they were like, get away from the Pontiac, you know? Yeah. And so I discovered that, you know, I would end up cleaning trash cans and, you know, clearing out a porch or whatever it was, sweeping, whatever it was to make a buck. And as I got older and I had my own businesses and my own employees and stuff like that, I discovered that what I learned back then wasn't too far from what I'm doing today. You know, no matter how good your statement of work is or your master services agreement, you're always, you know, you're always kind of getting creative in order to keep things going. And yep. And that's the lesson that I learned. So I started to look around as I matured into different jobs and different careers and different industries. And I saw that the people that do well are those same people that are creative, that learn how to use different philosophies in business rather than what the established status quo is. Those are the people that do well. And the people that don't, you know, sort of wither away and go out of business. So I didn't want to be that. I wanted to be somebody who did well. And about 6 or 7 years ago, I started writing down a recipe of what I saw in the business from, you know, what was going well. And it's called The Creator Mindset. It's a book about how to become creative no matter what you do.
Nice. You know, I've seen examples of that in my life as well. And it seems like the people that are willing to almost, I want to say, misuse things that are the status quo, they're the ones that are the out-of-box thinkers. They're the ones that figure things out and say, well, why can't we do it this way? Or why can't we use this like this? And, you know, it's all about that evolution mindset. You know, you're able to be flexible and kind of look at the world around you. And I wouldn't be surprised if that whole book can just be distilled down to do what works and don't do what doesn't work. That'll be $39.95. Awesome.
I love it. Yeah. You know, it really is. So what I found was when I started to write the book, every book in the marketplace was about the why mm-hmm. of creativity. And I read them all and I got really excited. And you finish a book about the why, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, now what? You know, yeah. I get it. So I wrote a book about the how. And you're right to some degree. It's really simple. It's about applying principles that are free and don't cost you a penny. It's really about a shift of perspective. And so I outlined some things that I think would help people shift their perspective. And the feedback has been pretty good, man. The book's selling really well. I'm getting a ton of emails from people saying, hey, I've learned something. I've learned how to do it instead of just the why. I've learned how. And I think the how is kind of a big deal. So, you know, you can teach somebody how to fish, right? That old story, or you could give them a fish, but I think it's far more powerful to teach somebody how to do it so that they can customize it themselves mm-hmm. and use it for whatever industry, from software to medicine, you know, from manufacturing, you know, to the, you know, soft drink business. I've had different clients across the spectrum, and everybody is really excited about finally having a recipe to emulate people that they respect. Like, we all love Steve Jobs and Elon Musk, right? We love these guys, and we want to be like them because they're, you know, they're innovative and creative. And so finally, I think I broke it down so that people can have a recipe on the how of creativity.
Man, that is powerful, because you're right. There's so many people focusing on the why. You know, I mean, Simon Sinek is famous for start with why, right? And it's like, yeah, you should start with why. But when you're on a journey, starting is the first step. You have to actually have some mechanics in there. And you're right. It does seem to fall down after a while. It's like, okay, I got my why. I know what I'm on this earth to do. Hey. And then, okay, well then, what's the next step? And the next step is how. So,
No doubt.
I'm geeking out about this, man, because this is something the world needs. Well, what would be a real world example? You know, if somebody were to, they want to start a business. Let's say they want to start a business. Okay, they've got their why figured out. They're like, all right, here are my gifts. Here are my skills. I'm going to go do this thing. What kinds of questions should they maybe ask themselves in order to understand better about the how? What kinds of questions and what kinds of answers would they try to get?
Yeah. So, you know, you're trying to start a business. You figured out what your market advantage is or what your differentiation is. You know, I hope that why had led you to fill a gap in the market, you know, because you don't want a me too business. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of like not what creativity is all about. You want to have something that separates you from the crowd, right? So hopefully you're setting up to do that. The first thing that I would do, that a principle from creativity, is start to listen. You know, people are so busy these days expressing what they think about things and how they feel, but, you know, they're selling a product or service, and how they feel and what they think means nothing to the buyer. So I think we need to start doing a lot more listening these days. Start to listen to what the market's telling us. Listen to what the buyers are saying. Listen to what's going on social media. We have more listening capabilities today than ever before, unprecedented in our time on earth. And so very few entrepreneurs, so very few companies, so very few people starting a business even listen to mm-hmm. what is going on. And that ability to listen will enable you to creatively launch in a way that will grab attention.
Nice. Well, it sounds like with people that are trying to create something that is repeatable, you know, they have, let's say, a software solution. I play in the software space, so I mean, that's just where my brain goes.
Yeah.
So if you got a software solution, you try to go find problems that solution fixes, even if it's not quite the best fit. If it's like 95% good, you know, you still try to get it. You know, when all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail, right?
Right. Right.
Well, and then going back to that, it's like, well, if we start with listening, what's going to happen, obviously, is we're going to have a slightly different solution for every single person. And that's okay. But now the repeatability aspect isn't the solution. It's in how you arrive at that solution. It's the listening part, which I like that. A lot of us don't do that. We don't listen. We go in thinking, I know how to do this. I know my way around. And then, and it doesn't work. I've tried that.
Yeah. I mean, believe me, you know, software, the business of software is riddled with people working really, really hard to solve problems that don't exist.
Yes.
That's software. Right. Yeah. And so I've consulted with many software companies. I talked about it in the book. And, you know, when you solve a problem that doesn't exist, you're always trying to jam, you know, a round peg through a square hole. Trying mm-hmm. to wonder why you can't get to that next level, wondering why this particular piece of software doesn't sell, or why, you know, customers aren't gravitating towards it. But what I try to do is to teach people to start with a definition of what the problem is rather than looking for the tool to fix it. I think we're always rushing toward the tool to fix it. And if we have a hammer, then the world looks like nails. If we have a screwdriver, everything looks like, you know, screws. So we need to really, especially in software, understand that, you know, technology is a tool of human ingenuity. It's not the end all be all. And we tend to fall in love with technology because we think it'll cure all of our ills, right? There's an app for that, or, you know, we can code that away, or low code, no code is the brand new coolest thing. But who gives a shit if I can look in my phone and order, you know, oh, I got no code, so I can grab my phone now and order an airline ticket. So what? Where am I going? Why am I going there? And what am I doing? And then how am I going to do it once I get there? Way, way, way more important than the app that can order an airline ticket for you. Mm-hmm. I think that technology is good for some parts, but I think that we use it to try to solve all of our problems. And when we do that, we lose a sense of creativity as we're too busy being, you know, comforted by what technology can offer.
I hear you there. And we also tend to focus on the technology instead of the problem itself. And it goes back to, you know, for example, software again, writing just enough code to solve the problem. And I've seen examples where a project will just get bigger, 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 bigger because, wow, I can make it do this. I can do this cool thing. And it becomes like this mental exercise, like, look at what I can do. But then over here, it's like, well, you're not actually solving any new problems with this. You're it's ego stroking basically, which sucks. It slows things down.
That's why it's so important to listen, right? Because you think you know what the client wants. You think you know what the user is going to want, mm-hmm. but the, you know, it is amazing how fragmented, you know, technology is, and especially the software business where, you know, you create a platform that you think, right, would be something that people want, and it gets out in the marketplace and there's zero sort of interaction with it because people didn't like it or they didn't know how to use it, so on and so forth. And so I think that we need to do a lot of listening. We need to have some empathy. I talk about empathy in the book and learning how to really put the shoe on the other foot, but actually more than that, really feeling what the other person's going through. Mm-hmm. I talk about humor and how humor is an important attribute of creativity because humor helps you lose that ego stroke that you're talking about and helps you understand that, you know, your best line of code might be helpful. Maybe.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, we tend to get really excited about what we're doing, but sometimes maybe it'll help if that. And so humor really helps understand that. And then finally, you got to have the courage to put those things together and understand that, hey, you know, this is going to go out in the marketplace. I'm going to be judged. And that's kind of the name of the game. Listen, I put a book out and, you know, most of the reviews, the overwhelming majority of them are positive. People mm-hmm. liked it. Some are neutral. Like, hey, you know, I learned a couple of things, whatever. And then some of them are horrible. Like, why would this guy ever write a book? This, what an idiot. You know, does this guy even go to school? Like, you know, there's a bunch of run-on say. I don't know what people say, but, you know, we're afraid of that. So we got to have the courage to develop something that we really think will help and do the listening and do all of the groundwork that it takes to get a successful product out into the market. Mm-hmm. But then you have to have the courage to go and say, you know what, I think this is a great solution because of these reasons. And you got to start to accept what the public or, you know, if you're a B2B company, what your clients are going to say about it, because, you know, that's a hard thing to deal with.
Yeah. I guess when you boil it down, humor is the opposite of hubris. Kind of helps cancel it out.
Yeah.
Is it too late? Can you stick that in your book now? Like in version 2?
Second edition.
I love it. Well, let's take a short break here for a sponsored message. I've got some more questions. Kind of going back to the amount of listening channels that we have, future state and things like that. You know, how do we get better at listening? But real quick here, let's take a short break. We'll be right back in just a little bit. Okay, and we're back. So earlier in the last part, Nir, you said, you know, we have more abilities to listen, more listening channels now than ever before. And I've kind of thought about this. I mean, I know social media is important. It's not going away. It's here to stay. But with so many ways to listen to people, do you think that we're hitting a critical point where we've got too many ways to listen? We've got too many inputs, or are we, like, what's your thought on that? What do you think the future is going to be?
Definitely.
Like,
so I think that we listen, you know, the analytical mind has been overdeveloped for so long, whether it's through school or through society or whatever. We join the marketplace, we get a job or we start our own business, and we are so inundated with the analytical type thinking that, you know, all of our decisions become spreadsheet logic and stuff like that, right?
Right.
Numbers, quarterly reports. We have lost track of the creative part of the mind. And what ends up happening is we're so out of balance and we're so out of whack. Yes, are there too many channels for communication these days where we hear feedback on a product or service? Absolutely. But if we're not in balance and we don't balance that material, then we're forever lost, right? You can get too extreme on any end. You can get too extreme on the listening end, right? You can get too extreme on not listening end and, oh, I'm going to do this because I think it's right. And it would be impossible for me, unless I was consulting with your company and really digging in, to tell you what that ratio should be. It's going to be different for everybody. But because we're so extreme these days, we're either on this side or on that side, I advocate for people to come to the middle a little bit more and have balance. Mm-hmm. And your decision on what and how much you are going to listen creatively, and my decision on how much I'm going to listen creatively, is completely different, because creativity is in our DNA, it's in our bones, it's in our marrow, it's who we are as human beings. Mm-hmm. And just because we're ignoring it, it doesn't mean that it's not there. And so the way that you listen and the way that you practice, you know, okay, I'm going to put a particular piece of software or some development out there, you know, a platform, and see what people think, you know, you might do that in a completely different way creatively than me, because we are individuals and the way that you approach that is going to be different. So yes, do I think that there can be too much saturation of that? Absolutely. There can be too much saturation of anything these days. I mean, it's crazy how people geek out and they get into these like super duper deep channels, these rabbit holes that, like, you know, can't see the light of day. And, you know, you begin to fool yourself into thinking that these rabbit holes are important, but they're not. They're just not. They're not really going to give you a listening perspective, a creative perspective. They're just, you know, channels that kind of geek out on something, and that's okay from time to time, but it's not going to give you an idea of what's going on in the marketplace.
It's not. And I've seen myself do that. I was getting ready to say, like,
me too.
I know people that do that. Oh my goodness. And it's like, that's me. Did I ever tell you a story about when I tried to play the hero card at a client? Tell you that story. Well, it was like my very first client that I ever had as a business owner. And I went in there and I had like, oh my goodness, I totally know how to do this. I can fix this. And I played the hero card and I wrote automation, and everybody was like, yay, that's awesome. And then like nobody used it. And I'm like, oh, and I mean, I was there for a year, so I was able to, you know, take a step back and actually listen to what they were wanting. And I did a much better job, but it's like, man, you're so right. You can get in such a deep, like, technology hole where you, like, you lose the personal aspect of it. It's like these days, I mean, especially now because of the pandemic, it's incredibly easy to build rapport with people. People really want to be heard, and those people need to have folks that are willing to listen. So it works. If y'all are listening to this and you're thinking, I need to change up my strategy, yo, now's the time. Start listening to people.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Questions. Yeah.
Listen, your relationships are more important than your skills.
Yeah, they are.
And a lot of people don't understand that. They think, oh, I'm a superstar developer. I'm a superstar surgeon. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really good at aerospace engineering. I work at, you know, SpaceX or whatever. And they think that their skills are why they're there. Yeah, that's part of it. But the overwhelming majority of why people want to work with you is because of the relationship part. If they like you, or, you know, you have some rapport together, and that is completely underserved in the software business, completely underserved. Mm-hmm. And that's not something you can offload to somebody either. You've got to do it. I know plenty of companies that hire, oh, we're going to hire some snazzy, you know, guy or gal, and she's going to go out there and represent us. But at the end of the day, it's a facade onto what the company's really doing. And unless you embed that creativity, that sense of relationship building, that sense of empathy, and all of these other creative tools, you're going to end up, you know, looking like a fraud, because you can't hire away passion. You can't hire away personality. You can't hire away a sense of who the company is and what you're out there to do. Mm-hmm. Clients can smell bullshit a mile away, and they'll tell you, you know, hey, this is really not working for us. So yeah. what I really recommend is that, you know, your listeners start to develop a different set of skills. You know, development skills are wonderful, but, you know, in this globalized economy, you can get somebody overseas to do it for pennies on the dollar that you're charging. You're mm-hmm. there really for the relationship and the quality of service that you bring. And when we forget those things, we're in deep dookie.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's one of the things that people struggle with when they don't see like how they add value when they're competing with people that, like you said, will do it for pennies on the dollar. It's like, what value do I bring? If it's just technical, if you're able to sling code like a Mo and you can just blah, blah, just bang it out, there's more than that. And the people that really get ahead, they're the ones that really know how to win friends and influence people. They know. They understand. It's active listening. I've got one last couple questions before we hop off today is, like, what would be an example of a really bad listener? And you don't have to name a company by name, but is there like a persona or an avatar? Like, if a company hears this and they think, oh, gee, that's me, like, what would an example look like?
You know, a bad listening company, a company that doesn't listen well, is the type of company that goes out there and puts a product or service on the market and does nothing afterwards. It is, you know, complacency that makes a bad listener. And I have personal experience in that. When I was in Hollywood, in Los Angeles, I put out a movie, got bought by Universal. We sold it to them. And literally, I thought that I'd arrived. I'm like, oh, this, look at this thing. It's amazing. I didn't listen. I got feedback from people, even my own staff said, hey, we need to do these things. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in meetings and you know, different opinions came up about where we should take the product, where we should take the service, you know, beautiful ideas. Mm-hmm. And I resisted each and every one of them because I thought, hey, you know, this is a good product. People are going to gravitate towards it. Yeah, they did for a little while, mm-hmm. but after a while they didn't anymore. And it's because I didn't listen to what needed to happen. So creatively speaking, I didn't develop different sort of offshoots and channels of that one primary product or service and kind of keep the party going, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, and I crashed and burned. The company went out of business and I did horribly. So I think that a company that gets complacent, any company that gets complacent, that's one of the telltale signs that you're not listening.
Ooh, that's powerful. I guess the flip side then, what is an example of a great listener?
Yeah, so like when you listen really well and you sort of see what the market's doing, you're constantly evolving with it. One of my clients, JetBlue, is an amazing example of this. You know, the global pandemic hit and, you know, people weren't getting on flights. So they, you know, started to not book the middle seats. And as far as I know, they were one of the first airlines to do that. And, you know, people started getting more comfortable and now, you know, it's tepid, right? It's kind of a lukewarm reception, but they were one of the first to say masks for everybody, hand sanitizing, you know, temperature checks, stuff like that. And, you know, being able to keep up with these innovations and keep up with these changes, it makes a good listener. Mm-hmm. Another example of that is, you know, the different products and services that they offer. They're always listening to the impact of what their passengers say, their customers, but also listening to their employees. And one of their employees came up with their mileage program and they they were able to adapt to it very, very quickly and roll it out because it was a good idea. So a good company that listens is one that believes in the power of the idea, no matter where it comes from, and it champions it. And JetBlue is a wonderful example of this type of company.
Yeah. Well, I love it. I mean, it sounds like they're building their own listening channels there. They're not just saying, oh, we got too much information. We know what we're doing. They're saying, hey, we're actively soliciting input, you know, and we'll weigh each thing and see what works and what doesn't. But yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I'll give you another example of a company that I work with called Let's Engage, right? They're a speaking and events bureau.
Yeah.
And I'm one of their speakers. And I met the guys several months ago. And they said, listen, we were out there talking with people in the industry nonstop. And we knew that the industry was ripe for change. The meeting planning industry hasn't changed much in many years. And what ended up happening was, you know, it was old school. You'd wait for a fax to come in. I'm not kidding. And you would sign it, you know, and fold it up and snail mail it back and wait for a check to arrive. I'm like, dude, a check? What are you guys talking about? And they're like, yeah, people got paid with checks and, you know, it was awful. And so they listened intently to what was going on in the market and moved it all into an app. And so that is a perfect example of where technology really solved the problem that really did exist. They listened to the market and they found that people wanted a different way to do it. And they've created a different way to do it. It's all about recognizing the gap in the market and filling that niche. For my book, there was a gap in the market because there was no how books. It was all why. So I wrote a how book, right? And doing really well. And I love it. But I urge your listeners to start to think about their product or service in a way that allows it to fill a niche in the marketplace and then really, really get out there and listen. And by the way, we just spent, you know, this whole time talking about one of the 92 tools in the book.
Oh, man.
And that's awesome because it's, you know, we did a deep dive and that's cool. And I hope there's some actionable tools that people can take away from listening to this podcast, but there's a bunch more. And really, does listening cost you anything? No, it doesn't cost you a penny. And the power of it can be, I mean, it could be, you know, 2x revenue for next year or even next quarter if you allow it to work and you allow it, you invest in its capability, you'll do really well.
You will. And I've seen that firsthand. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer, man. I know you got a flight to catch. So what was the name of the book again? And then where can people find you online?
Totally. It's called The Creator Mindset. It's 92 tools to unlock the secrets to innovation, growth, and sustainability. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's at bookstores across the country. And I would love to hear your feedback. My website is nearbashan.com. I'd love your listeners to go on there. We have a community and there's no Viagra ads or anything like that. It's moderated.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah.
It's free. How do you make money? Wow.
I know. It's all free. It's all free.
I love it.
Yeah. It's all about giving. Listen, the economy is changing. It's another tool that I talk about where, you know, the A leads to B, B leads to C economy doesn't exist anymore. And you got to do a lot of free things in order for A to connect with C, C to connect with F, and then maybe G comes in, you know, and sets you up with an account with E. You know, how did that happen? It didn't used to be that way, but I do, you know, I spend half my day on content and half my day on my sales pipeline. And my sales pipeline looks like a spaghetti, you know, a plate. I mean, there's no linear connection between, you know, what I do and how I get paid. It's amazing. And so I urge your listeners also to start thinking about their product or service in a tangential way. You know, it's time to give some stuff away and it's time to do a little good on earth and see, you know, how you can monetize things in a bit of a different way. And that monetization model might just be better than you have ever expected.
Oh my goodness. I wish we had longer to talk, man.
Oh my God.
We could go under another rat hole. We can probably do another one of the other 91 tools you've got in your book, man. But
oh man,
I geek out about this sort of thing. My pipeline doesn't look like a pipeline at all either. It looks like
good
Lego blocks, just a big pile of them. All right, man.
Oh man. Yeah. And you've got to get smart about how you do things these days. You have to get creative. There are, you know, so many obstacles and so many things that sort of block that way of traditional thinking. Yet every school out there is teaching that traditional sort of sequence, you know, that traditional pipeline, and that doesn't exist anymore. So I want to help people understand a different way of doing things and, in my opinion, a better way of doing things.
Well, you're on track for that. Well, I don't want to keep you much longer, man. I don't want you to miss your flight. You got to get out of here.
I got to run.
But thank you for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much for having me. I'd love to hear from your listeners.
Not a problem, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Did you hear this episode and go, wow, I'm a founder and all my friends keep telling me I should get on a podcast? Would I be a fit? Yes, you would. Every single person who steps out of their comfort zone to build their dream has an amazing story to share, and this is the platform for you to do that. If you want to talk about your dream, what led you to start your endeavor, what successes you've had or challenges you've been pitted against, this is the podcast for you. So head on over to archdevops.com/podcast to find out how to get on, and also check out our free tip sheets on guesting or even hosting your own podcast. This is Fritz, your host, hoping to meet you on the other side of the hot mic at ArchDevOps.